am putting on my hat as that, and bringing some wonderful University of Idaho brave, bold, and unstoppableness here to Sandpoint, directly at the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center. Really, the summit is a week-long event, and it had started yesterday where Dr. Ryu and I, as well as six wonderful other camp counselors, welcomed 45 local area youth to the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center, or some folks might know it as SOAC, where we introduced them to all things drone technology. And Dr. Ryu can describe a little bit more about that in a minute. But what the summit really, I think, for the listeners will want to know is that it coalesces on Thursday, where we will have education leaders learning from some awesome things that are happening in North Idaho education that are really what I would categorize as thriving. Oftentimes in education spaces, we question what is happening. And I can tell you, as an education change researcher, particularly focused on rural education, that there is a lot that we should be really, really proud of. And there is a lot of elements that ways that we are thriving, including the drone camp sponsored by NASA this week, where we are focusing on the watershed. But on Thursday afternoon, we have a public showcase where we will learn from the students that have been part of the camp, as well as some of the updates of our watershed projects happening on the creek and up in the upper watershed that I know folks have been highly interested in, where we will hear about the dreams of our students. So what's really exciting, I think, about this for our community is often we don't stop and take stock at what our future generations, remember we're borrowing all of this, really understand and think about. And so we're trying to involve them and position them as the leaders that they are, thinking about ways in which STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math can help, particularly related to drones. So we're asking them questions this week like, what is a watershed? What is a drone? And Dr. Ryu can talk a little bit more about the droneness in a minute. And then we're all asking them to imagine the futures of our watershed and our beautiful lands and waters in North Idaho and how they and technology can help us keep those places special.
So let's turn to Dr. Ryu in a second, but take a little bit deeper dive into your background at the university and here in Sandpoint and how you came to be involved in this, how it dovetails into the work you do.
Totally. Well, again, we all wear many hats, right? But I guess first and foremost, my hat probably this week is for being a rural education advocate. And I'm diving back deep into my past, like as in 25 years ago, as a middle school science, PE, and math teacher, and just bringing that excitement back to our community. I do research rural education change. Oftentimes that means that since returning home in 2017 in particular, that those change stories can be full of problems. And yeah, we have a lot of wicked challenges in Idaho, but we also have what is in abundance. And what is in abundance is our beautiful lands and waters. Like over 60% of Idaho, right, is unpopulated land, some of that public, some of that private. But I think that is one thing that we all share. And that's one thing that this week we're really trying to reunite. We have a project called Rewilding, and that's reuniting schooling with nature for the ability for students and educators and obviously our communities to thrive in the future. So just starting with the students from a leadership perspective, I'm a leadership education professor or assistant professor at the University of Idaho. We're also working with local education leaders. And, you know, so many leaders in our community, Phil, you being one of them.
Well, thank you. That's an amazing resume. And, you know, we want to dig into the conference itself. Dr. Jay, tell us a little bit about your background and, you know, what in your work brings you up here this week? Of course, we want to get to drone this, but
yeah, of course. Actually, I'm in faculty member in Department of Soil and Water System on the College of Agriculture at University of Idaho. Actually, my office is in down Boise. I interact with a state agency like Idaho Department of Water Resources to manage water in southern Idaho. So as a part of my job duty, I also interested in drought monitoring and forecasting for public information. But I used to use satellite data to visualize drought information at local level, but sometimes satellite data has some constraint in cloud cover, for example, right? If a cloud cover, we can get a high quality over in satellite images. And also we have to wait to get a final product of a satellite image, maybe 10 days and 15 days. But these days, drone technology grows so rapidly, you know, drone technology. So I just thought of that. Why don't we use a drone to visualize a drought, right? So a drone, for example, when you wake up early morning, look at the sky, in clear sky, you can pack the drone, go out the field to collect the data, and then you can get a final product in a couple of days. It's amazing. But as you know, this, many people fly the drone for recreation and hobby purposes. But not many people know how to fly the drone safely and legally in public domain and national airspace. Especially, there is no education program to educate youth to fly the drone safely, right? So because of that reason, I developed a drone education program called iDrone, Idaho Drone League. Basically, I provide small drone pieces and students build their drone from scratch. And also I teach coding to control and drone safely. And then we next day we go out the field, in airfield, and students experience flying the drone, several different sizes, small education drone and large, big drone. Students love it. Students have a lot of fun. But we actually, the first iDrone took a place in a major city across Idaho, Moscow, Idaho North, and Boise, Idaho South, and Pocatello, Idaho East. It worked very well. But during the pandemic, we won't be able to get together in person. So I started to broadcast my drone curriculum online. So more than 100 students joined the Zoom meeting online platform, and we had a lot of drone building together and drone learning together. It was great. So now pandemic is goes away, so we start to get together again in beautiful city Sandpoint. And then yesterday I just met the 45 kid from this area, and we started building drone together. Maybe tomorrow we're going to go to field trip, and that afternoon you're going to learn about the coding in here Sandpoint. Okay.
So it sounds like quite an exciting week. It started yesterday with this STEM camp.
Yeah, you should have seen it, Phil. There were, so we welcomed, and I mean, typical middle schoolers. I don't know what Dre and I were thinking when we decided that we would voluntarily run a free camp for middle schoolers. Actually ages 10 to 14. So there are some on either side of that. But the week after school.
Yeah.
But their energy is infectious. And so it was really quite delightful to welcome them in. They started their day by learning from a jet propulsion engineer who zoomed in from the NASA JPL lab. Mm-hmm. They learned from some local Idaho Forest Group. IFG was a great sponsor yesterday. They had their super large drones. Jake can tell you more about exactly what type, but orange drones out there with the kids. They were teaching them about sensing technology and how they use drones at IFG. They even had shout out to David, because they even had him find popsicles and it with the sensor technology. So they made it super interactive. It was just amazing. And then in the afternoon, when Dr. Ryu and his team had them all break out their drone kits and start to build their drones, a really important piece of all of this, I think, is that, you know, the ability to build and to code, but it is a huge piece of STEM learning that our communities in Boundary and Bonner County are just screaming for. The amount of makers out there, you know, I mean, just look in the back alleys or in the sheds. You know, everybody's making something and they're solving a problem, right? And so we barely introduced them to the watershed. Today, we will take them up to the Sand Creek watershed to give them more of a feel for how they can apply this technology by, again, asking them that question, what is in the watershed?
So the kids are coming from local schools? Is it a rep?
Yeah, so we sent out, and again, so many partners here. I know you have a question later about that, but we sent out the flyers to West Bonner School District, Boundary School District, and then our LPOSD, as well as other, you know, we have homeschoolers, we have some schoolers from the Waldorf School partaking in the camp. Our main goal was just, again, actually, so, and I'm sure the parents that are listening out there right now can, this really resonates with them, is that, you know, the busyness of school ends, and then all of a sudden we wake up and go, what are our kids going to do that is productive this summer? And of course, we now see more kids riding their bikes with fishing poles and, you know, all of that, which is so wonderful for our community. But the kind of the bigger why behind why we need to do these summer and after school programs is that the data is showing that more and more students spend, or our learners spend, more time inside online by themselves. And that's actually really, really damaging for their mental health. And not particularly helpful when we think about a thriving rural community. When we have kids, you know, sitting inside, it's not good for themselves. It's really not good for our community. So the bigger why behind this was really that we just wanted to get the kids out doing something productive and just empowering them to understand where they fit into all of this change that we're experiencing in our community.
So I'm not a parent, but, you know, I have a good imagination. So I'm picturing a parent a couple of months back looking at, okay, I can send my daughter to basketball camp, or my son off to archery and canoeing. Oh, here's one on drone technology. It's amazing how the options have changed.
Yeah.
Was it pre-selected by the individual parents, or was there a course with some of the schools that funneled kids into it as a result of some of the work they've been doing, even in middle school?
Totally. Well, there is definitely work within the schools that is dovetailing and helps with all of this. We are seeing, and obviously, you know, as you talk to your Lake Ponderay partners like Dr. Meyer and Andra and Casey and all of the wonderful leadership there in LPOSD specifically, that they're just providing more and more hands-on learning for kids. And this is really what this is hands-on learning. But no, specifically, we just cast the net as wide and as open as possible. It's free. And we just wanted anyone and everyone to participate. And I guess the lesson learned that I think some of us that are thinking about opportunities and trying to provide the best access to opportunities for our area youth is that, man, do we need to do a waiting or just a general sign-up window instead of having it be click the button at a certain hour and, you know, whoever has the fastest internet speed or parent at home that can do that, or parent that is available to do that, or guardian do that. Our camp filled up crazy quick. I'm sure it was even faster than 20 minutes, but in 20 minutes it was done. And I think that just explicates the sheer need for more high quality opportunities for youth in the summer. So that's what we aim to do.
Yeah, it does open the question of how to make the distribution equitable in some way, but and demonstrates the need. It sounds like this is a first time early in the week, but plans for it to become sustaining to be a multi-year event?
Well, maybe ask us that question at the end of the week.
Sure.
But I think so. I think that, you know, when, and this comes back to the larger why that's directly related to my research, is that when we look at what's in abundance, as an asset for education and really non-educational outcomes, we thrive. And that, in our, again, and you know this all too well with the other hats that you wear, Phil, but is that we have land and water.
Right.
So I really conceptualize that as something to draw on to lead education change and to help education in general. You know, we can all learn something just by stepping outside and observing, no matter what age we are. And really, that's the basic, most fundamental premise of what we're doing. We're just asking students to also think through technology and how that can help their observational skills.
So I'm hearing the application of the drone technology and the program, it comes from working with Snowpack watershed data. And clearly there's a benefit there, although we'd love to hear more about that interface. And I imagine Idaho Forest Group's drones, they're looking at tree cover and tree identity and forest type and things like that. What are some of the other practical applications that you're looking at this week with the students and the drones?
Sure. Do you want to answer that or do you want me to?
Yeah. Let me chip in and then you can follow up.
Okay.
So drone, these days, drone is everywhere, basically. You know, many people use drone for many, many different applications. Of course, in addition to military application, people use drone for transportation and real estate business and law enforcement. And Amazon.com recently, they launched a new drone-based delivery service, right? So a watershed application, maybe we fly the drone over the watershed to collect aerial image to generate data. It is a technical term, is a DEM, digital elevation model, which is a very critical data set to simulate the stream flow in watershed setting. And also maybe today or tomorrow, maybe a local professional gonna come and visit, fly their own drone to collect the data to generate the geomorphology in the stream channel. That kind of data will be very, very helpful to for the future stream flow forecasting, those kind of stuff in Silver Creek watershed. So that kind of application is typically used in watershed setting.
And you know, so again, our driving questions for the students, but really for anyone this week to think about, and that's on Thursday afternoon, so the 15th at 3:45, it will be open to the public and as part of this Rural Thrive Summit events, is to have the students answer this question, begin to answer this question is really rather more appropriate because, you know, good questions lead to lots more questions, right, Phil?
Yes.
But what is in the watershed? So, like, what is a watershed is what they're trying to wrap their minds around.
Yeah.
But what is? So today, in a little while, Dr. Rio and I will leave, and we'll get on a bus and take the kids up into the watershed. We're going to have them use drone technology. They won't be flying drones, but they will be learning alongside local experts. We have the Kalispell Natural Resources crew that is going to actually be flying LIDAR this afternoon over the it's kind of near the Popsicle Bridge on Sand Creek. They will be collecting data and showing the students exactly what they see. So when we think about what is there, you know, it's everything from like, what is the temperature of the water to what are the animals and all of the flora and fauna. I just heard last night from some folks that are in there doing some recreation planning that there is an old car in the watershed. They'd identify that it was, I think, from the 50s. And so hopefully we don't find anything super creepy today. But that's, we just don't know. And obviously we're not the first people to be here and we're not the last. So that's a super interesting question to me, right? Like we think back to, there's an archaeological site right now in Idaho that's saying something like 16,000 years ago, folks were in Idaho and dating it back. And so if we think about it on that longer time frame, it's a really interesting question.
So let's talk about a little bit about what the drones can find. What can they tell us about the water quantity or quality? What can they do? Does the LIDAR have the ability to look beneath the mud and muck and find out anything archaeological-wise? Tell us a little bit about the range of data it can collect.
So, of course, in the watershed setting, drone can fly on top of a mountain, collect the, snowpack data, so they can estimate how much snow accumulated in the future water resource during the irrigation season. That is another example. And also, we can use a drone to collect the water sample, actually, in addition to monitor water quality data, like dissolved oxygen and pH, water temperature, electrical conductivity in lake environment, and river environment, and stream channel, and such like that. Basically, technology is amazing these days. We can attach some IoT device, Internet of Things, to the drone setup, and then we can deploy the drone to collect and sample and monitoring water quality data in real-time basis, which is a great example of drone application for water quality, water quantity studies.
I'm picturing it actually swooping down and scooping up a little bit of water, or is it doing it through some sensing technology?
Yeah, exactly both. Basically, you know, IoT sensor detect water quality component, you know, as I said, DO and pH and those kind of thing in real-time basis, and then send the signal to the cloud. And so many water quality research across Idaho can share the data for their visualization and public notice, something like that. In addition to their real-time data monitoring, we can also collect water sample, water sample for further analysis like BOD, biological oxygen demand, require 5 days in the lab analysis. So those kind of technology these days is used in real-world application.
Go ahead.
Yeah, and just like with any somewhat new technology, well, even old technology for that matter, but there's always a big open-ended question about, like, what can it be used for? So that's a good question, Phil. Tomorrow, the students are learning from one of our colleagues is coming up, Dr. Lita, who does research related to wildfires. Mm-hmm. So she and her grad students fly drones directly into the smoke plumes of wildfires to collect data from the smoke, even. Mm-hmm. And to answer your question more directly about, I'm not an archaeologist, but from what I understand, drones can absolutely be used to start to help identify possible objects that might be, you know, of significance.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Interesting. Can they tell us where that big lump of brown trout is?
I don't know. That would be awesome.
You're not
probably,
telling.
Right? Because it can like track salmon spawning, you know?
Sure.
Well, we don't. This is why you need to come to the summit at 3:45 and ask the students these questions, right?
Yeah, that's true. And the students, if they don't know the answers, will at least get
excited.
Yeah,
then they can find out for us, right?
Well, let's take a short music break, and then we'll come back and talk more about the summit. And by request from our guests, so we're going to go to a little bit of Bodine's Idaho Live. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a few minutes more, and we'll be talking with Dr. Jay and Dr. Wargo about the Rural Thrive Summit coming up tomorrow. The Bodines live with their version of Idaho by request. You're back to the KRFY Morning Show here on 88.5 KRFY, listener-supported radio for North Idaho. Our guests today in the studio are Liz Wargo and Dr. Jay from the University of Idaho. We're talking about the drone technology and summer camp and Thrive Summit going on this week here in Sandpoint. Sounds already like I don't want to use the word smashing success. That's probably not a great word to use around drones, but a big success that did elicit a chuckle. Anyway, drone technology, it's something that I think 10 years ago, we might not even have been talking about it. Now, if we do talk about it, I think at least most people have some common point of reference with it. It's become pervasive enough in our society. We at least see some images in our heads.
Yeah, definitely. And that's the interesting thing is drones, when we think about any technology, you know, it can elicit fear. It can also elicit hope and everything in between. And we know that technology can largely be neutral. And so that's why it's really important for area youth, well, really all of us, to think through why we use it, right? And so that's a huge piece of why we're doing that this week.
Being a long-distance hiker, I remember one of the early suggested applications was maybe Domino's would use it for delivery. And being out on a remote trail and being able to use your PayPal application on your cell phone and fire up a Domino's pizza, that just got the heart a-fluttering.
I actually hope that doesn't happen personally. As somebody who like sweats up to the top of something to try and get a little away from a little bit of it all. But I'm sure we'll have some students that might come up with some interesting things they want delivered via drones as they, think about it. But that's also really why we're trying to ground this iDrone League in place in rural educational settings in Idaho as well, so that students can think really more about like the challenges that exist in our communities and how they can help as leaders and think through the ways in which technology can be part of the solution, of the solution, not the solution, right?
Of course, that's so much better. It takes a community to put something like this on. And from our conversations pre-interview, I know that there's quite a number of partners that are involved. Let's talk through that and hear who some of those are and what all they're doing to make this a success.
Sure. Well, I'm mindful of time, so I will not go into detail about each one. But on the national level, obviously, like we already talked about, we have NASA helping us out. We have the National Park Service that is involved, the International Mountain Bike Association. From a statewide setting, we have Idaho STEM Action Center. We have the cities of Sandpoint and Ponderay. We have Kinnexu Land Trust, POP, Nordic Club, U of I specifically. We have the College of Education, Health, and Human Sciences and the College of Agriculture and Life Sciences. And then, you know, we have some great industry, again, like I talked about yesterday with Idaho Forest Group and their awesome piece that they did yesterday. And they're going to also help sponsor the kids to have free barbecue at the end of the week, which is awesome. So again, thanks to IFG. Also, a huge piece that we're, you know, we're going to go jump into all sorts of awesomeness with the Kalispell Tribe Natural Resources Department. Eric and Mark is helping him out today. So, yeah, just many, many partners, Phil. I think that's kind of the way things get done, right?
Well, it is. It takes a lot to put on something like this. So many things. Funding, you mentioned this is free to the campers. There's got to be expenses involved, of course.
Yeah.
Where does the funding come from?
Dr. Ryu and I wrote a grant to put this on through the Idaho... But what is it called? The Idaho, something from the
Idaho Space Consortium.
Yeah, the Idaho Space Consortium. Nice. But that is ultimately NASA. And again, the whole goal with all of that is just to have students be thinking about the future and, you know, life beyond Sandpoint. Yeah. I guess life is the best way to put it succinctly. Yeah.
Well, there is the stage, Sandpoint, life beyond Sandpoint, the stars and the moon.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah. We can zoom all the way up and out.
So the Rural Thrive Summit, this maybe doesn't culminate, may not be the right word, but the crescendo of the week is Thursday with the summit.
Yeah, for sure. So like all things awesomeness in rural, usually some people are thinking, well, what exactly is this? How does it work? And then you just find yourselves in the middle of awesomeness. So again, the camp runs from Monday through Thursday. The students will be doing their showcase at 3:45, and that is open to the public. But in the morning on Thursday, we welcome local educators and education leaders from North Idaho in particular. We have some coming as far as, you know, way down by the Salmon River. So the time zone bridge, I guess, essentially. Mm-hmm. All the way up to the Canadian border that are going to be really thinking through education change together, seeing how they can reunite schooling with nature and just thinking about how to do things differently. One piece that's really exciting that I'm interested in learning more about is this idea of taking two problems together equals solutions. So we've got some really innovative things going on around apprenticeships and opportunities for youth that also, so the problem is not really problem, but the challenge is like finding authentic, awesome learning opportunities for our youth as they exit our K-12 system and the local workforce needs. Combining those two challenges together seems like a pretty promising solution. So again, 3:45 is when folks can learn more from the students. A little before that, they can hear about updates from the watershed plans. And then it all rolls into a big barbecue and a little bit of programming in the afternoon on the beautiful back patio of the Sandpoint Organic Agricultural Center. Folks, the barbecue may be open to folks. We don't know exactly. While supplies last, I guess, is the way to put it. In all things Sandpoint, it's a bit fluid in terms of how much we'll have.
Come hungry, but with a
backup. Yeah, come hungry, but with a granola bar in your pocket.
All of the activities Thursday are at the Sandpoint U of I Agricultural Center north of town.
Yeah, mostly. There will be a brief field trip for educators and education leaders up to our community forest in Pine Street Woods, but then we'll be back at the Ag Center. Mm-hmm.
I know part of this is something that is called the Future Casting Cafe. Mm-hmm. That sounds very intriguing. Tell us more about what that means.
You know, I think in our busy world, really what this means is, or what it is it's an opportunity for those that are doing amazing work to pause game, come together, and just ask, recognize and celebrate all the great work that they've done in the past few years, especially post-pandemic. You know, now that we're away from COVID, we're in that AC. I don't know if you've ever heard of this term, BC, CC, and AC, but like before COVID, then crisis COVID, and now we're in after COVID. And so we really have an opportunity to remind ourselves of the lessons we learned during COVID. And one of those that's really, really promising that my research and others are uncovering is just this promise of reuniting schooling with the natural environment. And so that will be educators and education leaders coming together and just thinking through what does after COVID mean? What are our lessons learned that we really want to keep? How do we want to sustain those? What do we want to look into more in the future? So those promising practices. It's a hard place, education, right now. Even those that are doing education is homeschooling, I think, can relate. The children and the adults that are helping out with that is it's like it's not easy every day, you know, thinking through continuing to be curious is really what we need to do as humans so that we can thrive in the future. And so that's what the educators and education leaders are going to do in the morning. You'll also be able as the public to see that as part of the showcase in the afternoon. They're thinking. So they will they'll be thinking what we call thinking visually. So you'll basically, what you're going to see is a bunch of messy post-it notes and design thinking style work from the kids and the leaders.
Mm-hmm. It sounds like an absolutely fabulous project. After this week, what comes next?
Well, my hope would be that all of us take time to do what Franklin Covey says, and that's sharpen our saw. So I personally, I'm going to hike a lot. I'm going to jump in the lake as much as I can to renew and refresh before we just bang back into the next school year. But I think also what's next is to take those lessons and to stay focused and to continue to refine those so that we can be healthier, happier humans and have healthier, happier environments for our students to continue to be educated in.
That's a wonderful thought.
Yeah.
Dr. J, for you, what's next?
Yeah, I have another online campus schedule the next week, so I'm going to getting busier, I guess. So, and actually, as a part of this event, we have an excellent poster session Thursday, right? Mm-hmm. You know what? One of a team, when I interacted in the last time during the last camp, and they actually brainstormed. They want to fly the drone for pizza delivery service in Treasure Valley. So exactly, yeah. You know, you mentioned, you know, pizza delivery in the mountain. Yeah. When I hosted this event at multiple locations across Idaho, and Sandpoint in particular, I got impressed a lot because the local community and the federal agency, state agency, and city personnel get involved in this activity. Wow, it's very impressive. You know, it's actually without their help, this camp wouldn't be successful, right? Mm-hmm. So I'd like to thank you their strong support to make this event mm-hmm. successful. And that is my another thank you note to everyone.
Yeah.
Well, it sounds wonderful. As we're starting to wrap up, if people are listening and they want to find out more information, share this, what they've heard with friends, is there a website or a Facebook page or mm-hmm. phone number they can call?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, if you call my cell phone right now, you're not going to get me because I'm going to be out with 45 middle schoolers right now, Phil. But yeah. I think the best thing for them to do would just be to show up at the Sandpoint Organic Agriculture Center at 345. And if you find yourself at the main gate with a bunch of parking, of course, you could just park in the near parking lots that are close or adjacent to them and do that close walk. Following in the future, the College of Education, Health, and Human Sciences will have a more robust presence on their website related to rural education change. So that's where a lot of the footage mm-hmm. and videos from this week and more things moving forward will be.
So we'll be able to go there and see more if we can't make it Thursday.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, great. Well, before we wrap up, closing thoughts, Dr. J, we'll start with you.
Yeah, again, thank you everyone for supporting the ETC event. If you know more about my program, you can always visit our website, idroneprogram.org. You can find out a lot more additional information over there. Thank you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. True. You know, so our theory of action and our theory of change is still being worked out, specifically in education research or geek speak. But it really comes down to these three things, Phil. Thrive now, dance in the rain, and Parker Palmer's quote, we have what we need right here. And I include that with what we need as the land, the water, each other. Mm-hmm. So I think if we partner and we just continue to remember what's in abundance, we're going to thrive. Yeah. Well, we are. So, and we're
I like that. It's very similar to one of the gurus of lightweight backpacking and of rock climbing, Ray Jardine, who's famous for saying, if you need it and you don't have it, you don't need it.
Totally.
Which makes a lot of sense when you're out in the field and don't have it. Yeah. But anyway, we're going to wrap up this morning's show right here. It's the Rural Thrive Summit. The drone stuff going on sounds incredibly interesting. Come on down on Thursday to the University of Idaho's extension, not the extension office, the Agricultural Center, 345, and find out more. I want to thank you, Dr. J, for coming in, and Dr. Wargo. It's been a great interview. As always, if you came in partway, you'll be able to go online this afternoon to krfy.org or tomorrow and listen to a downloadable podcast. So we're going to go out with a request by Dr. J, a little bit of Aerosmith. So hold on and dream on.